first Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is now living in exile after an apparent attempted mutiny against Russia's military. This comes as American officials say at least one Russian general knew ahead of time about the rebellion plans. That general hasn't been seen publicly for close to a week. All this comes as Ukrainian forces are in the midst of their planned counteroffensive aimed at retaking eastern parts of the country. We're talking now about what just happened, what we do and don't know, and what it all means for the continued Russian occupation of parts of Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this weekend's events and what they mean? Were you following this in real time? And like many people, were you confused by what happened, what came out of it? What would you like to know about the attempted apparent mutiny? And what role, if any, should the U.S. play in supporting Ukrainian resistance against the Russian military? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mikhail Troyetsky is a professor of practice in the political science department at UW-Madison. Mikhail, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Good afternoon, everyone.
Can you talk about, first of all, the unique role of this Wagner military mercenary group, but obviously closely affiliated with Russia? Can you give us a little of their history?
Well, I think the background to mention here is that the Wagner group was created some 10 years ago to give Russia deniability in its operations in eastern Ukraine during the initial stage of the invasion, when Russian forces helped two Ukrainian provinces de facto secede from Ukraine. And President Putin wanted deniability. He didn't want to accept Russia or its military was there in eastern Ukraine. So I think that was when the idea came up of establishing a private military company. But later on, as time went by, I think the Russian government figured out that it was quite useful. The PMC was quite useful in kind of shadow operations in other places as well, primarily Central and Northern Africa, where, again, Russia could stay under the radar as a country and yet have its military that de facto reported to the Russian general staff just, you know, conduct operations, maybe prop up some local regimes or anti-regime forces, depending on who the Russian government wanted to win in the manifold conflicts in Africa. So that was how the Wagner group came into prominence. As the fighting in Ukraine was raging after the February 2022 invasion, Wagner also turned out to be in demand given the problems faced by the Russian military. So the ruthless but still very well-trained fighters were found quite useful, again, as a supporting force for the Russian uniformed military during their war in Ukraine.
Now, here we are last weekend. The leader of this military mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, criticizes more than he had before the Russian military, criticized the grounds for the invasion, the full invasion of Ukraine, turns his troops down the highway toward Moscow, then stops. Now, there's a lot of speculation. Mal, what do we know about what what led to that? What do we know for sure about his motivations in doing this?
Well, I think we have enough evidence to perhaps suggest that the Kremlin and President Vladimir Putin personally was growing unhappy with Prigozhin and the Wagner Group as this maverick force that was getting public traction. And with Prigozhin coming up with all those statements blaming the Russian top commanders for failing to support his very effective men in their assault in a, you know, in a Ukrainian city that apparently Putin wanted to seize. So Prigozhin's public prominence was kind of unpleasant to Putin and the Kremlin. So they decided to deal with him somehow, marginalize him, and then perhaps also destroy him and part of his fighters physically. So at that point, I think Prigozhin, who likely was tipped off about that plot by the Kremlin, decided to just to rebel. He had little, if anything, to lose. And apparently he also enjoyed support and at the very least sympathies among some Russian military commanders, including high-ranking generals. And he also was getting traction among the rank-and-file military, among the soldiers fighting on the battlefront. And so he just went ahead and seized a major Russian city in the south, out of which much of Russia's campaign, military campaign in Ukraine, is being run. And then he staged a march on Moscow, aborting it at some point, being quite close to Moscow when it became clear that his mercenaries will most likely have to fight their way into Moscow. And apparently, amid some defections or dissatisfaction among his men, who didn't want to just, you know, fight against Putin's forces, that wasn't their agenda, that wasn't their platform. And then, as long as Putin himself and his associates were afraid of what could happen, Prigozhin proved able to bail himself out of that situation and was allowed to escape unscathed to Belarus, whose president offered him asylum. And apparently some other Wagner commanders and maybe even troops are with Prigozhin in Belarus right now. That is as much as we know. We also hear from the US media that some of the generals that are being suspected of sympathizing and maybe even abetting Prigozhin's mutiny have been followed up with and have been apparently interrogated, maybe even kept in custody. So there's some kind of a purge or at least a reckoning going on in Moscow and elsewhere among the Russian military and more broadly the state apparatus in the aftermath of that coup that apparently proved quite divisive for the military and also the Russian bureaucracy.
We're talking about the events in Russia last week. The uprising by the Wagner mercenary group quickly dissipated. Mikhail Troitsky is with us, Russia expert at UW-Madison. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. If you're wondering what happened next with this mutiny in the aftermath, wider thoughts on the U.S. role supporting Ukraine against the invasion, call 800-642-1234. Mikhail, a lot of people have pointed out that, okay, we have this armed revolt for a little while. We didn't see Russian people rising up in support of it. Also didn't see Russian people particularly rising up in support of Putin in the face of what he said was effectively an emergency, the risk of civil war. What do you make of the non-public response from the Russian public here?
Well, I think Prigozhin may have counted on broader public support and enthusiasm and some political momentum that this show of public support could have generated. But in Russia these days, apparently the majority of the population kind of is sitting on the fence. They do not fiercely support Russia's war effort in Ukraine, but neither are they excited about Russia just retreating, acknowledging defeat, pulling out of Ukraine. So those people like Prigozhin as someone who probably just made a difference. He went on the record complaining about the problems with the Russian military. And apparently many people think that the Russian military has been underperforming in Ukraine. So Prigozhin was kind of giving this system a shake. And he also was and is a very apt public relations figure. So he actually went on a tour, on a PR tour around Russia, making his case in front of audiences in a number of major Russian cities. So he was getting public traction, which kind of explains some of the display of public support, especially in the city of Rostov that Wagner forces captured early in the mutiny. But otherwise, no one in Moscow, for example, was getting out in the streets, you know, preparing to cheer Wagner troops as they would be entering the city. And of course, Prigozhin is a very controversial figure for many people, especially Moscow residents. Prigozhin is a ruthless warlord whose forces committed many documented, you know, war crimes and atrocities. So that kind of figure was, you know, would inevitably be very divisive and controversial for the Russians, even those who think that Putin is either underperforming in the war against Ukraine or has run his course as Russia's president and has to go because he's, you know, a dictator, undemocratic, is waging a criminal war, and so forth. So Prigozhin, he and whatever political ideas he kind of was hinting at were not sufficient, apparently, to rally support for him among the Russian public and apparently also the military on whose defections he could have probably been counting.
Let's bring on a caller. Jeff is with us in Dubuque. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And my question involves military tactics. When the Wagner Group headed up towards Moscow, would that not have been an opportunity to grant them a temporary ceasefire, enabling them to leave their positions in Ukraine to join that group as they're heading towards Moscow and to be filled by the Ukrainians?
Interesting question, Jeff. Now, Mikhail, as I understand it, after the fighting in Bakhmut, the Wagner Group mostly had withdrawn from the front lines to be replaced by Russian soldiers. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think so. The Wagner Group had to pull out. Well, they actually volunteered to pull out. They announced their withdrawal from the front lines, and they were based in some field camps around the city of Rostov and also in the Ukrainian territories that Russia annexed since the start of the war. So they were apparently no longer involved in the fighting at the time of the mutiny, which basically freed up their hands to just make a raid on Rostov and then head towards Moscow.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Interesting question. Mikhail Troitsky is with us, professor of practice in the Political Science Department at UW-Madison. We're looking at the latest in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, including the apparent mutiny that stalled last weekend and what happens after. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the latest news in that war? Do you have thoughts on American support for Ukraine? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation with Mikhail Troitsky, professor of practice in the Political Science Department at UW-Madison, looking at the attempted mutiny in Russia by mercenary forces there, the ensuing fallout, and in general, the latest status of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions. That's 800-642-1234. Mikhail, a big question now is, does this mutiny in any way weaken Russia's military in its ongoing efforts in Ukraine, or are the troops on the front line not looking over their shoulders at what's going on here? It might be a while before we have a real answer to that question. What are you watching for?
Yeah, I think clearly the Abortiv mutiny highlighted at least some divisions within the Russian military. And I believe also state bureaucracy, high-ranking officials, some of whom may well have been wishing Prigozhin well and the success in his coup attempt. We also saw President Putin just delivering one brief address, short of fiery rhetoric, just, you know, kind of condemnation, a moderate condemnation of Prigozhin and his forces. So he apparently was afraid of going all in. Maybe hedging some of his bets. And eventually, as we saw, the coup ended with some kind of a compromise, not with a destruction of Wagner and Prigozhin, which may have been planned before the coup started, actually triggering that coup attempt. That said, of course, the Russian military are likely operating pretty much autonomously from the politics that is going on in Moscow and Russia in general. So the commanders are still there, and you know, the whole organization of the troops and their tactics and their plans may have not been affected. That said, again, the questions with respect to the decisions that were being made and the resolve that the Russian government has to persist in that war have indeed come into question as a result of that coup.
We heard from Bobby in Madison, who wonders if the Belarusian president is allies with Putin, why would he let Prigozhin and, as you said, officers and maybe troops come into Belarus? What do we know about the Belarusian leader's angle on this?
Well, I think for Putin and the Kremlin, it was the best bet to actually have give Prigozhin an off-ramp. And if you are Putin, and if you think about what kind of off-ramp may be available, you immediately think about your ally, Lukashenko in Belarus, and you just ask him if he would be amenable to a solution whereby he gives temporary asylum to Prigozhin and some of his mercenary commanders so that you can deal with them later in Belarus or elsewhere. And, you know, Lukashenko is happy to oblige. This does not pose major threats to his rule in Belarus, and maybe even gives him some leeway if he is able to you know, to just make good friends with those troops. He may later on use the mercenaries in certain situations whenever his, you know, grip on power is threatened, for example. So that could look like a good opportunity for Lukashenko as well. This is how I see it. But again, you know, too many balls are in the air, and we really don't know now how it's going to play out. Too many moving parts.
Mihail, I wanted to ask about American and Western European support from Ukraine. We've seen a steady leveling up of the kinds of weaponry supplied, from handheld items to more and more larger and more sophisticated pieces of equipment. Now reports that the U.S. is looking at granting longer-range missiles than we were willing to in the past. Just your thoughts on the significance of that material support for the Ukrainian military.
Well, at least the Ukrainian side has long been suggesting that this longer-range artillery could be key to its efforts, you know, at a counteroffensive against the Russian forces. And it might well be true as long as Ukraine may be able to strike Crimea. from the current Ukrainian positions, and you know, destabilize the situation in Crimea for the Russians, that would be a very big deal. So on the US side, I think the takeaway from this abortive coup was that there are just maybe too many divisions within the Russian military. And there are some elements among the Russian military that may support ending the war and that may be amenable to either negotiation or perhaps even a new coup that could, you know, destabilize this whole war effort. And in any case, you know, Moscow may not even have the guts to retaliate at this point. And that, of course, may have influenced this decision, or not yet a decision, but at least an advanced discussion of potential supplies of those shells, of those long-range artillery shells to Ukraine by the U.S.
Mikhail, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. My pleasure.
Mikhail Troyetsky is a professor of practice in the Political Science Department at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at the latest developments in the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, including this apparent mutiny over the weekend by Russian mercenary troops.